This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You are listening to The Morning Run. It's 6 a.m. on Thursday, February the 3rd. I'm Shazana Mokhtar, together with Wong Xiaoning and Philip C.
Good morning, good morning. And a happy third day of Chinese New Year, isn't it?
Chor Sam,
yeah. Whatever it is, the tiger is clearly here.
We have officially entered the year of the tiger. There's our pet studio tiger, you know, just wishing you hello and gong xi fa chai.
Apparently in Terengganu, there was this tiger roaming around, scaring villagers as well.
Was this the one that was a dog or the actual tiger?
No, it's an actual tiger. I did see the pictures of also that dog that was apparently painted like a tiger.
Yes.
And who does things like that? Seriously, who? But okay, I've got friends who are just horrible people because they put their dogs and cats into costumes that mimic like a tiger.
Yeah.
Or like a lion. And I'm like, why are they torturing their animals?
It's cute.
Because
my sister-in-law does it.
Adorable, exactly.
It's adorable.
They are pets, okay, guys. They're not like little Barbie dolls.
Get the dog to bark. Get the dog to purr.
Okay, I don't know. I just find it very strange, actually. But anyway, it was I think KL was relatively quiet, I have to say.
How was your New Year's celebration?
Mine was perfect.
Oh.
I loved my Chinese New Year this year because it's been 2 years since we've connected with a lot of people. Mm. Not seen a lot of people. So it's really nice to see everybody back together again.
Can I ask you, were you satisfied? Because you, before the Chinese New Year break, you were complaining about the fact that Malaysians don't seem to understand inflation when it comes to ang paos.
Some did, actually. Some
did actually take
that into consideration. Correct. And actually went even higher than the rate. So
better than our official CPI of 3.5%.
For sure. So in the past, I noted some people, because I keep tabs, someone gave me 50 and this time they added the 10 ringgit on top.
Oh, wow.
Because it's been weird to add 5 ringgit on top of the 50. So just added a 10, and so that really passed it, which is
okay.
Great.
Now we know who's the cheap one in the morning run.
That's me.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you had a good holiday, and I know Chinese New Year extends for still a couple more days, 2 weeks, if I'm not mistaken. So we'll have more festivities, and I hope all of you out there are also enjoying your New Year festivities. As for what we're going to be covering this morning, we have a lot of different stories on our docket. At 7:15, we're going to take the pulse of the global equity market with Sean Markowitz of Schroders, the London-based asset management firm.
Yeah, and then later on at 7:30, we'll be talking to Kaw Lui Ling about all these forced labour allegations that are directed at Malaysian companies. I'm going to ask her, why just Malaysia? What can we do from a policy perspective to overcome this issue?
And at 7:45, we'll have a discussion between the two BFFs of China and Russia that will be meeting this Friday on the sidelines of the Beijing Winter Olympics. Very interesting discussions going to take place with Alexei Muraviu of Curtin University.
All this and more today, Thursday the 3rd of February. Keep it here, BFM 89. 9.9. That was Tame Impala kickstarting our morning with Breathe Deeper. We are The Morning Run. I'm Shazana, together with Xiaoning and Philip. Now, the festive season is the perfect occasion for scientific observation of human interaction. So after
sure.
2 years of...
It's like in the wild, right?
Exactly. After 2 years of restricted socialization, I imagine this year's Chinese New Year celebrations were slightly merrier as visiting is allowed.
Yes.
Although no open houses, but still, I think the spirit seems to be slightly more festive than years past.
Okay, I'll correct you. You're right, no open houses, but if they're invited, they're allowed in, right?
Yes, exactly.
That's according to the SOPs,
well,
right?
Well, later when you see the newspapers, there was a very big open house by the government as well.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, all right.
But I'm just curious, after 2 years of COVID, right, have we adjusted to, you know, or gone back to our, you know, behavior? And knowing how to interact?
Exactly, right. And so I think we're talking about this whole phenomenon called fubbing, which is actually phone plus snubbing. And that's how the summary of it, right? And it's essentially basically using your phone while you're having a meeting or dinner conversation. And I wonder if that's a prevalent issue in reunion dinners.
I have actually never heard of this term fubbing or phone snubbing until you pointed us to this article, Philip. But it is, I think, quite a sign of the times that this happens. And I think we can admit that we see this happen more often than not these days.
A lot.
Oh, for sure. And I'm a culprit for that. I don't know about you, Shani and Shaz. When I had my first BlackBerry, I was attached to it. So much.
You had
I was fubbing nonstop, left, right, center.
How long ago? Yeah, I remember my first BlackBerry too, and I was like, oh my God, this gadget is amazing. I can send messages all the time. It never switches off. But it was just after, but have we still continue even though we changed our phones?
So why do you think people fub? I mean, from what you're saying, Philip, when you got your BlackBerry, it was the novelty of having this new gadget, right? Yeah. So it kind of saps all your attention. But what about now when smartphones have just become part of our everyday, right?
It's even more prevalent. I mean, I don't know about your, my classic observation of life is you go to a restaurant and you observe the next few tables and it's like a family of four.
Yeah.
Guess what? Nobody's talking. Everyone is staring into their phones and all you see is this light blue glow on their faces, right? Because they're all engrossed in it.
I think it's for a very simple effort, for a simple reason. It's just, it takes a lot of effort to strike a conversation now. It's lazy, it's easy and lazy to just use your phone to basically receive information rather than to use your brain to try and have a conversation. And that's, I think, one of the biggest challenges people have here.
And I suppose it's contagious as well, right? So when you see one person kind of not paying attention to the rest of the people around them, it can sort of infect others to think like, okay, fine, you know what, let's take my phone out too and I'll play my game or scan Twitter, whatever it is.
That's very true. So I actually take a conscious decision not to use the phone, but it's hard now because you actually have to go around with the mice jatra, right? But I try to actually put the phone and I even turn it the other way so I don't see the phone. But you're absolutely right, Charles. Yesterday I had lunch with a friend. He had a call. And I instinctively didn't, instead of waiting and like enjoying the scenery, I just took the phone and I was starting to fub at the same time.
So while he was on the line, you went to do your own little thing on the
phone. Yeah, correct. Because
it's like we can't sit in stillness just for 5 minutes. We have to be distracted permanently. And I wonder whether in a way then our minds are always wired to be engaged, to be entertained, and whether that in the longer term is bad. So even I find, and I'm guilty of it, where I find it hard to read any long form articles anymore because I'm just always engrossed in something quick, fast. I need to find out something and then I move on. And that's also reflected in our behavior when it comes to the smartphone.
Concentration has basically definitely diminished in this whole process. I think that's one of the biggest challenges in this generation because what the phone gives you is this very short, sharp and very interesting content. So even what I do now is from 8 p.m. to 5 p.m. I black and white my phone. So the content now is all black and white. So I can't see anything. So it just makes it less engaging for me.
You
to
black
actually.
And white your
so
phone.
So the whole screen is in black and white.
Oh.
It's in grayscale.
So it's like you become colorblind.
I become colorblind, essentially. So this stops me from using the phone from 8 p.m. to 5 a.m. so that I can basically sleep well.
Interesting. Oh. I have not heard of that before, but interesting.
Well, there's a function on the Apple phone which allows you to change the type of focus, right? So you can go into sleep, you can do concentration and everything. And I do something similar. So from, I think mine is 9, not as early as yours. And then I wake up at 3. So at 3, it goes back on the color. But it's good because then whatever WhatsApps, I don't care. I'm sorry, it's too late. Life goes on for me.
And there is also a function on the Apple phone which allows you to limit the time that you spend on apps. So you can actually set a time limit for the apps that you use. So if there's a particular game that's addictive that you don't want to spend 6 hours on, maybe you just want to spend 1 hour on it. You can actually put a time limit. And then when your time limit comes up, it will say, okay, you've reached your time limit. You do have the option of ignoring that time limit, but it does put a barrier in front of you.
It does put a barrier. But I think the issue here is all this is fine if you consciously decide to do it and say, look, I want to play a game and this is a time from 8 to 8:30. I want to be on social media, fine. But it's when it just overcomes and it basically it's out of control.
So
that's when it's a problem.
So true. When it's just an impulse and you just keep doing it and the next thing you know it's 3 hours later and you've been on TikTok all that while.
Yes. Someone here is guilty of that. Must be.
I'm talking about anecdotal observations.
Societal issues.
Exactly.
Oh, okay, if you say so.
Well, tell us what you think. Do you fub? You know, is phone snubbing? Has it become an unfortunate habit on your part? What do you do to tackle that situation? You can let us know on WhatsApp at 018-789-8899 or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. We're going to take a quick break and we'll come back to ponder on the following question. Does having purpose make a job more bearable? And what does purpose mean? Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Electric Blue by Arcade Fire. You're listening to The Morning Run with Shazana Shaoning and Philip. It is Thursday, the 3rd of February. Now, we are taking a look at a story on purpose in your job. So we've all been told at some point or other, find a job doing what you love or have passion for. And these kinds of employees are the ones who are seen to have purpose in their career. Oftentimes, it's to change the world or leave some sort of legacy or, you know, create betterment. But this article in The Economist suggests that we view purpose in a more multifaceted way, or that we should view it in a more multifaceted way.
If you could only see the cynical faces in the station this morning, our rolling eyes.
I know, your eyes are rolling all the way up to your whites.
Purpose. Not money, just purpose, is it? Okay.
Well, I think this is the exact time to have this conversation and to think about it. If you think about the month of February after Chinese New Year, bonuses are being distributed out. People are now thinking, okay, I've collected my bonuses. What do I do next? Am I still relevant in the business? After 2 years in the pandemic, where do I sit? Where do I move forward? I think these are all the questions. And so then these deeper conversations about what's my purpose? What do I do in life? Does my work define me? All this starts bubbling up and it can be very overwhelming in my view.
Is this what you're going through, Philip?
Well, I think I went through that for sure throughout the pandemic. But in the end, I do think that it's overrated.
You mean the search for purpose is overrated?
I think it's very important.
Okay.
But
the solution is overrated, of
it being purely work is overrated. I think people tend to think of the work as primarily needing to have deep purpose. It's, I think, pushed too hard already.
Okay. Do you think this is a modern construct? I mean, was the idea that work should have purpose, is this something that came up fairly recently? Or is this something that, existed before us?
I think it's a little bit to do with privilege, I'll be honest.
Yes.
Because if you, let's say, you know, you were really, you come from not a very good background, very poor background. And you realistically just really need to put food on the table. I think purpose as to what you're doing, satisfaction, meaning becomes less important, right? Because what's the priority? The priority is to make as much money as possible.
Yeah.
Then purpose becomes secondary. So it is a form of privilege.
So I think, like, as we always say, right, life is a reduction of options. The challenge with this generation is that there's so many options and you have the ability to choose and pick, essentially because we have all this privilege given to us. You know, we live in a nice house already. We have had the university education. So we can pick and choose what we want to do. And I think that just draws you into a deeper conversation. Whereas last time, it's like, I have no choice. I have to put money, food on the table. I'm marrying much younger, so I actually have a family to provide for. So the options are lesser there.
I would argue that that is a form of purpose, though. Just that purpose has been seen very differently as it evolves, you know. So initially, it was the purpose of working is for me to get an income and take care of my family. But perhaps as you said now, because there's so many options, because there's a generation that was perhaps left better off by their parents, suddenly purpose can take all different sorts of forms and meaning.
Oh, I agree with you. And this is where it's interesting, right? It's all interesting in the form that the purpose was also not selfish at the time because I want to provide, right? But now in this step, there are also two types of purposes. There's one which is I want to change the world. I want to basically have a deep impact. But there are also some purposes about what gives me deep happiness as well.
Your own satisfaction.
So actually, this article that we're basing this conversation off on in The Economist, it's based on new research from Bain, the consultancy. And it shows that people are motivated by different things. And the Bain study actually identified 6 different types of purposes or different types of people, what kind of purpose they have. So you've got the pioneers, those who want to change the world. You've got the operators, those who derive meaning outside of work. You've got the givers who want to work directly that improves the lives of others. So there's just so many different, there's 6 of them, so they say. At least 6.
There are these archetypes. And this is where I find very worrying when I used to be a consultant, you know, for these GLCs before. And there was this company I remembered, and they basically said everybody should become a CEO.
Are you feeding people a fake dream?
It's a fake dream and it's also not healthy because
not
everybody wants to be a CEO
as well. And this is the hard truth, but it's life. Not everybody's meant to be a CEO.
Yes, and you can have deep purpose and impact if you are not a CEO as well.
Exactly.
So I don't understand this whole infatuation about being a CEO or being top of the corporate ladder when you can have really meaningful impact and purpose at whatever position you have in life.
So the point is, I think all of us should have purpose, but purpose should not only be about our work. Our work should not just define us, right? It should not be the be it and end it of everything. But this goes back to this Maslow hierarchy of needs, right? In terms of what's important to you.
Yeah.
And of course, as we move up the ladder, we have choice. So that's a good thing. But I think in terms of, like, if you expect 100% satisfaction from work, sorry, I'll be the realist, it's not going to happen.
I think everyone, people need to be flexible in how they view their work. And purpose doesn't have to be just that one, we must change the world, we must leave a legacy. It doesn't have to be that. And I think more people are starting to realize that.
And it changes as you grow, right? As you get older, and every decade, you might have a new purpose, or every 5 years, you might have a new purpose.
I fully agree with you. And I think people shouldn't be too hard on themselves if they still cannot pinpoint that purpose now.
And I think just piggybacking on the point that you made earlier, Philip, about how a company says that their employees should strive to be CEO, companies need to think of ways in which they can allow their employees to grow without having to clamor for that top position as well. So I think it's a kind of a mind shift on both the individual as well as the company, because a company that's able to cater to the various purposes of all their employees are going to have a happier employee base.
And diverse, and diversity actually delivers much better results.
Well, tell us what you think. Do you have purpose in your work? Do you want to find purpose and what that is? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'd love to hear what you think. It's coming up to 6:25 in the morning. We're heading into the 6:30 a.m. News Bulletin. And when we come back, we check out headlines from around the world. Taking you to the News Bulletin is Always the Sun by The Stranglers, BFM 89.9. You are listening to The Morning Run. We were grooving to Human League, Don't You Want Me, one of Xiaoning's top favorite songs from the 80s. I'm Shazana Mokhtar, together with Wong Xiaoning and Philip C. Let's take a quick look at social media and the kinds of messages that we've been receiving this morning.
Well, Ro chimed in and said that, ironically, the gadget that's supposed to bring us closer when apart keeps us apart when we're together. And I think this is the fubbing article, right, that we're talking about.
It's so true, though.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
So if, Ro, you're hearing us, it is 110% correct.
But this technology brings you closer to us, and we're happy to be that way. Anyways, let's take a look at what's making headlines around the world. Philip, why don't you start us off? Actually, no, Xiaoning, why don't you start us off in terms of what's caught your eye?
I'm staring at the abyss of Bloomberg, which you all know is my favorite.
The black screen.
Anyway, it's an article in terms of who is attending the Olympic Winter Olympic Games, which is starting, I think, Friday.
I didn't get the RSVP.
Oh, okay. Maybe because you're not a despot. Because Xi Jinping is going to host 21 world leaders at the Winter Olympics, and a majority of them preside over non-democratic regimes. So I guess if you're not a despot,
not
and
a
you're
despot,
not boiling your
why.
Enemies in oil, I'm sorry, you're not likely to get an invitation.
Great.
But the people that are attending, or the countries that are attending, Bloomberg has divided them into authoritarian, hybrid regimes, and democracies. So authoritarian, I'll name some. Turkmenistan, Tajikistan, Saudi Arabia. Hybrid regimes are like Pakistan, Kyrgyzstan. Democracies include Argentina, Ecuador, Luxembourg, and our friendly neighbours down south, Singapore.
I find it very interesting that of all the choices they had for democracies, they included Singapore there.
It is a democracy. Well,
it is. Technically, it is.
People do
but
vote,
were,
you know.
I'm sure there are more options than that, but clearly there aren't.
Well, in speaking of visitors to Beijing for the Olympics, we are going to be talking about this because later on tomorrow, President Vladimir Putin of Russia will be meeting with his counterpart Xi Jinping for the first meeting, in-person meeting that they've had in 2 years. So a lot of eyes are going to be on them and what they decide to discuss, because of course at this moment they're not in the good books of the other geopolitical power, the US.
Yes, I mean there's been so much tension, right, between on Ukraine, the Russian-Ukraine issue. I think EU, NATO, US have been really working very hard to try and put pressure on Russia, and I think the tension there is because of natural gas. And that is why it's causing so much fissure in the EU zone. And it's actually, if you see in parallel to that article, if you see in Bloomberg, Eurozone inflation has unexpectedly hit record high as consumer prices jumped 5.1%, driven by higher energy prices. And that's for me a very telling sign about the tensions that EU and NATO have with respect to how they address and manage Russia.
That's right. And if tensions in Ukraine escalate, you can only imagine the impact that'll have on the overall Europe economy. Not a good correlation in that sense. Meanwhile, other headlines. Anybody want to chime in with something?
Let's talk about Bojo, my favorite prime minister. Remember him? Or might be out of the door
soon.
Well, this is an article in The Guardian. They say that he's under pressure as more Tory MPs call for him to go. I think everyone's still waiting for the Sue Gray report. It isn't out yet, right? Because it's been delayed because of a police investigation. Or is it out? Have I missed
it? It's out, but it's been redacted because some sections are due for police investigation.
That's so right. So lots of black lines here and there, lines. Right? Like yeah. some FBI report.
Yeah, so it's out already, but it's not conclusive. Apparently, it was a very thick report, 500 over pages. It came out, and that's why actually in the past comments, PM's questions time, I think Sir Keir Starmer put a lot of pressure on Bojo to quit.
I think the two big revelations from what has come out of Sue Gray's report is firstly that there has been a failure of leadership with regard to observing COVID restrictions. And number two, she also pointed to a culture of, she didn't use this term alcoholism, but she did say there was a culture of drinking or a worrying emphasis on drinking in the workplace at number 10.
You know what one of the tabloids did, right? Because it was reported that what happened is that staff were sent to off-license. Is it called off-license?
Yeah, off-license, yeah.
And with suitcases. And they filled the suitcases with alcohol. So these tabloids repeated it. They went to the off-license and found out how many bottles, you know, they were literally bringing to 10 Downing Street for these parties. And it wasn't just one party. It wasn't even two parties. It was a series of parties.
There are more parties coming to the light because of this report and these investigations.
Yeah, so I think at the moment there's about 17 MPs that have submitted a letter of no confidence. They do need to hit the 54, but it's still uncertain whether they will do that.
So will Bojo stay or go? That's something we're going to be watching closely. Can I just squeeze in one more story that I thought was so interesting? And this is regarding Wordle. I think we may have spoken about this not too long ago. It's that free game on the internet where you try to guess a word in six guesses. Well, Wordle has been sold to the New York Times for a seven-figure sum. Now, I was wondering, what seven figures? That's at least $1 million. So that is a heck of a lot of money for a free game on the internet.
That just came out very recently.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering where the synergies are between that and New York Times, but perhaps crossword.
It's the crossword puzzle,
this is the next
it?
Crossword puzzle.
I mean, the New York Times has a lot of really fun word games, like the crossword puzzle, the mini crossword puzzle, and also Spelling Bee. So I'm really not surprised that they've decided to go for this, but whether people will stick with the game now that it's got the New York Times Association, I think a lot of people are worried whether it will still be free.
Yeah, that's the question. Are they going to start charging, right?
That's right. So something to keep watching. For now, Wordle is still available on its original website for free. I haven't tried today's challenge yet, but if you have, don't tell me what the answer is. It's 6:45 in the morning. We're going to head to a quick break, and when we come back, we'll take a look at what's making news in the local newspapers and portals. BFM 89.9. That was Never There by Cake, but you know who is always here? The Morning Run. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m., you will find us here. I'm Shazana Mokhtar, together with Wong Xiaoning and Philip Z. Xiaoning, you have this look of perplexion on your
face.
She
likes to eat cake, not listen to
it. I'm just like, what song is this? Who sang it? What is it called, cake? Isn't that what you put in your mouth? Okay, never mind. Moving on.
God.
Anyways, we are taking a look at what's making headlines in our local newspapers and portals this morning. Who would like to start us off?
I will start, shall I? Since I don't have any cake in my mouth. It's about the children's vaccination program. So private pediatrician specialist clinics are going to be involved in this, what they call PIC kits, and this is in the Malaysian Reserve, page 2. So children between the age of 5 to 12, they are going to be given two doses free of charge, and it's a 0.25 ml per dose, which I think is smaller than what adults are getting. And basically, every child is eligible, those who go to school, those under institutional care. And I think they've classified even vulnerable children in particular should have access to this vaccine.
So the Health Minister, Kairi Jamaluddin, has said that over 500,000 children have been pre-registered for these vaccines. And we're not the first country in Asia to do this. We're actually among the laggards in this, because Indonesia started inoculating primary school pupils age 6 to 11 in December last year. Singapore started vaccinating children age 5 to 11 in December last year as well. China was the first among Asia to start vaccinating children as young as 3. So we're keeping in trend with other countries in the region.
I think they're using the Pfizer vaccine in this case here. And it's actually through some of the mega PPVs, the World Trade Center in KL, Axiata Arena, as well as the Ideal Convention in Shah Alam. And they will introduce about 24 more PPV kits around the Klang Valley starting February the 5th.
Because these four existing PPVs are already open to any Malaysian above the age of 18 who wants their booster shot, right? There's no need to actually make any appointment. You can just roll up to any of these PPVs and get it done ASAP if that's what you want. So I guess it makes sense. You can bring your kid at the same time if you're going there. But other news, I'm just going to switch a little bit to business news before we move to the politics news. Grab has acquired a majority stake in Jaya Grocer. We talked about this yes. earlier in the year, last year. It's happened. I think there are also question marks about the rationale for this, right? But if you ask me, I think it's a lot to do with the inventory management and supply chain that they want. I don't know about you, but have you been getting lots of notifications from Grab regarding buying your groceries through them? Yes. I've been getting it nonstop.
I think that's the next frontier, isn't it, in Asia with respect to using your app. It's to buy groceries because that's where a large chunk of your purchasing power lies in. Mm. So I think people want to take advantage of that. But you need to have that logistics to deliver that well.
Mm. Yeah, so apparently the online grocery market in Southeast Asia could be as much as $50 billion. And currently, according to this article in Malaysian Reserve, the penetration rate is only about 10%. So I think everyone's eyeing this very, very lucrative market because there's only so much food delivery you can do and ride hailing. And if anything, COVID-19 probably shines a light on this segment, which is probably the least impacted by any pandemic because you still need your groceries.
So with, you know, such a tech clash happening now, do you think valuations are interesting enough for a lot of mergers and acquisitions to happen? Because this is really ripe for a lot of consolidation also, right?
Yeah, and Grab themselves, they didn't have such a great debut on Nasdaq. Bukalapa has come down a lot significantly. Maybe there will be a little bit of consideration in terms of how soon can you get to profitability. Right? Yep. Because you don't have that much cash to spend anymore. And as usual, when you are private versus when you are publicly listed, the pressures on you to actually show a return is very, very strong.
Yeah, so let's hope we see more marriages there. But one marriage that's clearly not working out is the UMNO and PAS pact for the Johor state election. Because according to PAS Information Chief Khairul Nizam Khairuddin, it looks like the parties must part way because the rift has caused disunity among Muslims.
I mean, I think this is something that we've been following throughout all the different state elections going on. We saw how in the Malacca state elections, UMNO and PAS were on opposing sides. Well, not opposing sides, but they were not on the same side for sure. And yeah. I think it looks very likely that in Johor, this trend is going to continue. What does that mean for Muwafaqat National? What does that mean if UMNO were to win Johor? And what does that mean for the future of the Malaysian government, essentially?
Yeah, and staying on this topic, in the Malay Mail, it was reported, I think, by that it's UMNO's chairman, Datuk Sri Ahmad Zahid Hamidi. He said that the formula that they use in Malacca, which was to field a lot of new candidates, highly qualified candidates, may not be used this time round in Johor.
I think that's very interesting because you're saying essentially they want to try it and test it. But what's also unique about Johor is that you're getting the youth vote now really being reflected. And, you know, we also were talking about even potential postal votes coming through now and available in Singapore, right, Charles?
That's right. The EC chairman has mentioned that they intend to allow postal votes from Singapore for these Johor state elections. This is a departure from previous practice. This was pioneered in the Malacca state elections, and I'm really glad to see that they're continuing with this for the Johor state elections. I'm hoping that this will pave the way to allow for postal votes for Sabah, Sarawak. It doesn't have to be just outside of the country, but even within the country that this can be something put forward.
So interesting strategy, isn't it, that they decided to basically ditch the Malacca strategy when I would have thought that, okay, I think you would want to get younger candidates into the fold.
Yeah, but maybe it's also difficult to satisfy the existing incumbent MPs, right?
Well, lots to watch for this Johor state elections. Election Commission will be meeting on February 9th to iron out all the details. So we'll be keeping watch on that. We're coming up to 6:57 in the morning and heading into the 7 a.m. news bulletin. Taking you to that is Another Brick in the Wall, Part 2 by Pink Floyd. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.